The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, and we are streaming The Big Lead on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. I'm energized. Rode my bike into work today. 3 days a week. Doing 3 days a week now. Excited.
Oh my gosh, you were so sweaty.
Yeah.
Dripping. Literally dripping.
Yeah. When I took my bike helmet off, a stream of water poured out of it.
But doesn't that feel good?
It's the best. Yes.
But you could do it outside.
Eh.
Take your helmet off outside.
Then how would coworkers know what a hard worker I am?
Exactly. You want them to know.
Exactly. It's all
by the
big
sweaty
show.
Clothes you have draped all around your desk right now, drying out.
That's the challenge is I have to wear the same clothes biking home. And so I have to dry them off on the back of my chair. And Nicole's disgusted by that.
Or you could also, as I said, use a locker. Bring it. Yeah. Bring
ooh, that locker would smell. I guess in the bike room, though, they have some racks.
Yes. I'll go hang them up at the bottom of the hour.
I don't know that anyone cares about this but us.
I know. This is the story of my life, though. Everywhere I go, I get nagged. At home, I get nagged. At work, I get nagged. Every second of my life.
Jeez. What would you do without us?
Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
As you just heard in Ursula's newscast, unbelievably, there are rumblings that Sound Transit wants to come back to us for more money for ST4. Now, as you heard in Ursula's cast, ST3 is way behind schedule, way over budget. But the thing that doesn't get reported, ST1 is not done yet. It is now 13 years behind schedule. They promised to get to the U District. They did not. Husky Stadium is not the U District. That is not what they promised. And there's no end in sight to this overrun. They are now 13 years over time. They are tens of billions of dollars over budget for the first phase. And, of course, being the criminal liars that they are, when they got to Husky Stadium, they said, on time and on budget, because we did a reset. And we just changed what we promised the voters. We changed how much it was going to cost. And it is the most criminally corrupt public agency in the history of the United States. It's the most expensive. We're on the hook now for $100 billion. And when I talk to people around the country about this, they don't believe it because they've never heard of such a thing. They've never heard of a transit project costing $100 billion. And it will be obsolete by the time it's built out. It's a 19th century technology. We had trains back in the 1860s. And so it's incredibly outmoded technology. It is an incredibly bloated agency. It's run by criminals who overtax the value of your car and mine so that they can scam us out of even more money. And yet there's this advocacy group, Seattle Subway, a guy named Keith Kyle, and he says, no, it's time for ST4. Now understand, $100 billion. About 2 million people in the taxing district, that's $50,000 for every man, woman, and child. If you have a family of four, your contribution, and this is not made up, and people have to start thinking about this, about the cost versus benefit. If you have a family of four, husband, wife, two kids, your family's proportional contribution is $200,000 to these criminals. And now they want to expand. Seattle Subway talked to Channel 4, ComoNews.com.
We really want to focus on, you know, what's the best way, what's the most environmentally friendly way to add capacity in Seattle and really help people get around easier and less stressfully.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, environmentally friendly. They've knocked down 5,500 trees. If you drive on I-5 just north of Northgate, you see the carnage of these beautiful old growth trees that have been cut down. They are going to replace it with this concrete monstrosity. And to say that that's environmental, it's not. It's just a way that the crooks could get as much money as possible. And by the way, you know, you can, like I've done. I'm commuting by bike 3 days a week. It's not like there aren't other options. And I live, you know, it's a pretty good hike. For me, it's 25 miles round trip. It's not the longest ride in the world, but it's a ride. And that's much more environmentally friendly. It's beautiful. Burke Gilman is an absolute gem. You ride alongside Lake Washington. You're riding through the trees that hug both sides of the trails. It's gorgeous. But instead, Sound Trends, they're blowing down as many trees as possible to put up a big monstrosity.
We want to get this funding source updated sooner so there's more time with a solid basis to plan and make sure that Seattle's able to vote to expand in 2024.
Yeah, so they want just Seattle people. Like, you're not taxed enough to pick up the tab for all of these subway lines within the city now.
That's really up to the people of Seattle. Where do you want it to go, and how big do you want the next plan to be?
I'll tell you where I want it to go. He told all that to Channel 4, and Cairo 7 also talked to residents about this.
There's no way the city's going to survive expanding at this rate if you don't have more transit.
I'm just concerned about putting more money into it if it's not really doing anything to help with the traffic flow, because we know what Seattle's like. It's a mess.
It's not doing anything to improve traffic flow. They admit that. Their own environmental impact statement. It does nothing to improve traffic flow. And but, hey, I don't live in Seattle. If you are going to put it to just Seattle people, and if Seattle people want to raise their taxes for something that will never be usable in their lifetime, I guess you can go right ahead.
We don't think the region is going to be ready for another big ST3 level vote for probably a long while.
So they're going to just scam the people of Seattle, who are already taxed to the hilt, but they want more. And it's a criminal agency, I'm telling you. And the scam continues with Sound Transit. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Bizarro world.
It is bizarre, man. We need more cops on the streets. There's crime everywhere. There's open drug dens. We've got our homeless encampments are being compared to some of the worst third world slums in India and Africa. And we need more cops on the streets. But Seattle being Seattle, they're thinking about adding 12 more cops, but they will be unarmed. This is part of that, I've been telling you for a long time, this is part of that socialist, Marxist, we hate the police, we hate police departments, and we're going to take guns away from our cops, and this is just unbelievable. Why would you hire unarmed cops? So if they see a violent situation, they're not going to be able to intervene. Our friends, our news partners, Cairo 7 TV, they reported on this.
City leaders want to bring back the Community Service Officers Program. This previously ran for about 33 years here in Seattle. Now, police say they have many more serious calls to answer. This would allow them to free them up and bridge that gap. Now, a city council committee will hear that plan as presented by Seattle Police at 9:30 this morning. The CSO program wants to hire a dozen unarmed and non-commissioned officers to help with homelessness, dispute mediation, and other low-priority calls.
Okay. So why can't you hire regular cops? You're going to work with homelessness. What if they come across a homeless guy with a gun? who's robbing his fellow homeless people. What if you come across a domestic violence knife attack situation and we're going to put unarmed officers out there? Why in the world wouldn't you just hire 12 more cops, give them all the tools that cops should have and need, and listen to the cost of this for 12 unarmed cops?
Now, they would not be able to enforce laws, but their patrol cars and their uniforms would also be distinct from...
We don't want cops to enforce laws. Laws are burdensome. Laws are the man trying to keep us down.
Normal commissioned officers. Now, this comes as SPD struggles to retain their officers who cite dealing with some issues as a deterrent.
If we want to get the best people here, they have to feel like that they're going to be supported, that they're going to, that when they go out to do this dangerous job, that people will actually support them in doing so.
Well, they said that it would be about $1.3 million to hire 12 unarmed cops who cannot enforce laws. I don't think they're paying them $100,000 each. So how much of that is getting swallowed up in bureaucracy by the city of Seattle? But at a time when crime is as bad as it is, and you have violence in these homeless encampments, and you're going to have new cops working with the homeless, but they're going to be unarmed and not allowed to enforce laws. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of. But that's the level of idiocy, the idiocracy that is our region right now. Next up in the Big League.
The Big Lead Update.
We've talked a lot about how the sanctuary state law is directly connected now to the assault of a rape victim. And I will say, we talked to Brandi Cruz yesterday because she got this bizarre response from the spokesperson for the King County judge. And the judge, everybody said, why don't you name the judge? I'm happy to. Judge Nicole Gaines Phelps is the one who put this illegal rapist back on the streets with no supervision, and he then attacked his rape victim, allegedly. He hasn't been prosecuted for that attack yet. And then he fled to Mexico, and he's posting pictures of himself from Mexico on his Facebook page now. So the way this went down, we've heard the court audio, where the judge says, I'm not allowed to ask you your immigration status. There is no law that doesn't allow her to ask immigration status. The sanctuary state law is unconstitutional, and if the judge wanted to uphold her oath to the U.S. Constitution, she could ask the immigration status of a rapist. But instead, she goes, well, I want you to go back to Mexico, but we won't supervise you, and just let us know when you get there. And then turned him loose, and he allegedly went back to his rape victim and violently assaulted this wheelchair-bound woman. It's unimaginable. And so we've been trying to get to the bottom of this because I don't know what law Judge Nicole Gaines was citing. I had Brandi Cruz on the show yesterday, and she contacted the King County Court spokesperson and said, are you going to extradite this guy from Mexico for the assault he committed on his rape victim? And they said, oh, no, we probably won't do that. And then a winky face emoji. Like it's some kind of game, some kind of big joke for the judge who turned a rapist who's an illegal loose, and it's now a joking game. Winky face. Are you going to extradite him for the assault? Winky face, probably not. I mean, it's just reprehensible. And I'll give him credit. My friends at Q13 News, I texted David Rose during their newscast last night because they are on this. Dow Constantine loves sanctuary laws. The King County exec. He loves two things. He loves having deputies take him out drinking, and he loves sanctuary laws. So they asked Dow Constantine, what do you think about a King County judge letting this rapist illegal go, and then he commits another assault, allegedly?
So on to the King County executive, Dow Constantine. someone who has been a fierce advocate for sanctuary policies, surely he'd be willing to defend those policies. Not so much. Not so much. His director of communications communicated to me, "We don't comment on specific criminal cases because they involve decisions by separately elected officials." Well, isn't that convenient? I told you this was going to be long. And truth be told, there are so many more emails I could have shared. Whether you agree with sanctuary laws or not, there is a problem here. It is a problem when the people we elect and those whose salaries we pay are unwilling or unable to defend or explain the decisions they make and how they impact the people they serve.
Yeah, so Del Constein supports a law that allows an illegal rapist to attack his rape victim. And then he won't comment on it. And Hannah Kim, reporter for Q13, she tried to get hold of the judge again and the governor. And what did they tell her?
Well, this morning we went to a press conference where Del Constein was present. And we asked that same communications director for an interview with Constein regarding Ramirez's case. He declined my request. He did follow up this afternoon with an email to reiterate that the executive cannot speak for actions of other elected officials.
Bunch of crap. As absolute nonsense. But Del Constein's a coward.
He did, however, finally clarify that there is no county ordinance that restricts judges from asking any questions. Also, we just heard back from the governor's office, another elected leader we have been in contact with about this since last week. Listen to their answer. It says, "We reviewed the case and the new law does not impact the ability of this judge or any local judge to communicate with ICE or ask about immigration status."
Really? The judge said, "I can't ask his immigration status." And that's why she's turning an illegal rapist free to walk the streets to attack again. Huh. But the governor says the law doesn't prevent her from that.
Many individuals who are prosecuted for violent crimes are sent to facilities run by the Washington State Department of Corrections. DOC has authority to share immigration status. So if it wasn't sanctuary laws that barred her from asking, then what law was Judge Nicole Phelps talking about? We reached out to her spokesperson again, and this is what she said about an hour and a half ago. "Since illegally entering the United States is a crime, defendants have the right to remain silent when asked if they entered the U.S. illegally." In that statement,
this is unbelievable. That's not an answer to the question, why didn't you ask him his status? So, yeah, again, I have to ask, do they wrestle with guilt? Does Judge Nicole Phelps, does she stay awake at night realizing that she turned a rapist free to attack again? Does Dow Constantine, we know how Dow deals with it. He drowns his guilt with booze. But Jay Inslee, I'd love to see if somebody asked him about that at the Democrat debate tonight. These are the kind of leaders we have around here right now, and they're giving everybody the dodge. Good job to Q13 News for staying on this as well. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you, and then the border camps. It is an illustration of how despicable politics and the media have gotten in this country. I will explain. Next. I'd like to hear your thoughts on everything we're discussing. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. You've probably heard the phrase attractive nuisance. If you are a homeowner and you have a swimming pool in the backyard, well, neighborhood kids might be attracted to that pool. And so you have to do everything you can to keep them out. Usually it's build a fence. The United States has become an attractive nuisance, apparently. People from other countries want to come here. And the photo that everybody has seen of the father and his little girl lying dead in the Rio Grande River, it's a heartbreaking photo. And I've heard some people say, well, he shouldn't have been sneaking into the country illegally in the first place. If the man, I mean, I don't know what his motivations were. But if he wanted a better life for his family, I don't know from what he was fleeing. And I know that the United States is an attractive nuisance. But who's to blame for this? Is it the dad for wanting to come into the country? No. Like I said, I don't know his circumstances. Is it politicians? Yeah, absolutely. For refusing to build that wall that can prevent people from coming into this country illegally. People would know to not try to do something so dangerous. The picture of that dad and daughter, it's a really interesting media study because it's on the front page of the New York Times today. It's been on CNN and MSNBC virtually nonstop the last 24 hours or so. It is a dramatic departure from news organizations' policy of not showing dead bodies. Dramatic departure. Because they think that that photo of the dead father and daughter will hurt the president. So they have altered their policy of not showing dead bodies. Now, if they would also, we told you the story yesterday about the illegal who crossed the center line and took out seven motorcyclists, jarhead bikers. They ride for Marine veterans and their spouses. An illegal, 23 years old, took out and killed seven of them. Do they show those dead bodies on CNN, in the New York Times? ICE released a list of the illegals who have done horrible things. They've been caught. They've been caught. They could have been deported. But then they go on to murder a kid at Cass County Sheriff. They go on to try to abduct 14-year-old girls in Seattle. They beheaded their cousins. Do they show those dead bodies of the victims of crimes committed by illegals? No. But what's going on with this picture of the father and the daughter, it is an example of how the media is more despicable today than it has ever been. And also politicians, the same thing. Remember just a couple months ago, there was no border crisis, according to all the Democrats. No border crisis whatsoever. On March 14th, Elizabeth Warren said, a fake crisis at the border is fear-mongering of the worst kind. March 14th, she called it a fake crisis. Today, Elizabeth Warren tweeted, this is a humanitarian crisis. Really, it was a fake crisis 3 months ago, and now it's a humanitarian crisis today. Why? Well, because they've decided, they thought that calling it a fake crisis 3 months ago was a plan to fight the president's efforts to build the wall. We don't need a wall. It's a fake crisis. Now, the Democrats collectively have decided as a strategy to call it a crisis. And so now they have all done a 180 on this. April 2018, CNN's Brian Stelter called it a manufactured crisis at the border. Today, CNN's Brian Stelter tweeted about the humanitarian crisis at the border. An absolute 180. Don Lemon at CNN, 4 months ago.
Here's a really, really disgraceful thing, okay? You listening? All of this, this whole mess is manufactured. It's a manufactured crisis. A non-crisis at the border that's really not fooling anybody. People may think, oh, it's a crisis. They know it's not a crisis. That's all for political expediency. That's all for getting what they want. That's all for saving this president's rear end. After all, what kind of emergency is it when you do absolutely nothing about it?
So 4 months ago, Don Lemon called it a manufactured crisis. Last night, he was on the air crying about the picture of the father and daughter.
Okay, it's... Sorry. That picture, I can't even look at it.
You must
I can't even look at it, Chris. Every time it comes up, I have to look away. I can't. And I'm not being dramatic. It's just
dramatic. Of course it kills you. It kills every part of you, every part of us that makes us human. This issue, not since what I saw during the war that was being ignored here at home, has something ripped at me and made me feel like I'm not doing the job right.
When I first saw it, I said, this can't, please tell me this is not real. This is not real. And then the alert came out from CNN, and it's real.
4 months ago, Don Lemon called it a manufactured crisis. Last night, he's crying on the air about the crisis at the border. All of these people are going to go to hell. When you do a 180 on something as serious as this for purely political reasons, and they act like they care, we got to build a wall. We have to provide a disincentive so people don't try to sneak into this country illegally. And then you won't have these tragedies at our border. I don't fault the father in trying to get into the country. He's been taught over the last several decades that we don't enforce our borders. But we've become an attractive nuisance. And I tell you what, I got a list in front of me. Nancy Pelosi called the situation a fake crisis at the border. Chuck Schumer, a crisis that does not exist. Steny Hoyer, there's no crisis at the border. I'm going to go on and on. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, we don't have a border crisis. I got a list of 26 Democrats and media people. Joe Scarborough, MSNBC, an imaginary border crisis. And on it goes. And now they've decided collectively that they'll call it a border crisis, and maybe that'll hurt the president now. It's despicable. It's the media at its absolute worst. It's politicians being politicians. They don't have any moral compass whatsoever. We got to build the wall, man. Got to take care of the attractive nuisance that is the United States of America. And we have lots more to do. As I said, the Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. Love to hear your thoughts on all of this. 98973. Lots more straight ahead during the Dory Monson Show. Just pulled up the press release that ICE sent out last week. And it really is amazing how none of these stories get covered in the mainstream media. We seem to be about the only ones who cover this stuff. But Rosario Ramos Ramos, an illegal in custody ICE lodged detainer, but he was released without notifying ICE because of our sanctuary laws here in Washington. A few months later, he was arrested and booked for murder. Now, that's a murder that could have been prevented if this guy was not in our country. And I said yesterday that for victims, it doesn't matter if the killer is a citizen or an illegal. It's just as much of a tragedy to lose a loved one. But if it's an illegal, almost every one of those deaths is preventable if we just enforced our laws. Another one from the ICE press release. Elder Carceres Coelho, a Honduran man who is at a county jail here in Washington State. ICE had a detainer on him. They were not notified when he was released. And a few months later, August of 2017, he was arrested for homicide. That's a preventable death. So all I'm saying is, hey, New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, put those dead bodies on the front page and around the clock on TV. I mean, you have a policy to not show dead bodies that you have violated because you thought the one of the dad and daughter was so powerful to hurt the president. But have a little balance in the media. You kidding me? Christian Octavio Parra, he was being held at a county jail in Washington. ICE had a detainer on him. Not honored. They released him. 8 months later, he shot and killed his estranged wife before killing himself. She'd still be alive today if we enforced immigration laws. Put that photo on the front page, New York Times. And if not, why not? I mean, if you claim to have any measure of objectivity, why wouldn't you give that equal play? And I think we all know the answer. This is so funny. The president this morning, he tweeted out Sunday cable news channel ratings. And 12 of the top 14 shows were on Fox. And President Trump tweeted, "Wow, Fox News did great in the ratings. CNN is dead as a doornail, no credibility, and MSNBC is dying fast. Fox and Friends and Maria Bartiromo are doing great!" Exclamation point. It is very weird to see a president tweeting out cable news ratings. Okay, and then finally, in this segment, I got an email from a listener. And I don't want this to become a trend. I'm not going to do this on any kind of a regular basis. That's my fear of doing it even one time, that everybody's going to want me to do this. But it's like a Casey Kasem long-distance dedication. I got this from listener Todd, who writes, "Tori, need your help. I am Sergeant First Class Todd Smelser, a member of the Washington Army National Guard. Over the past year, due to significant military commitments and dealing with medical issues, I have not given my wife, Lisa, the attention she so deserves. Flowers, cards, and words cannot express my love and appreciation for her support during my time away with my platoon. Would you please read the following on air to my wife? We are avid listeners to your show." Well, so, Todd, going out to Lisa. "Lisa, over the past year, both our lives have been stressful. Both family issues and my military service has created a rift in our marriage. I also don't say thank you enough for your support and love putting me back together during those long days away when I am training. You are my rock, my foundation, and my love. Always know, never a day goes by that I don't cherish your love, your touch, or your smile, and appreciate the little things you do to make life better. You are a better woman than I am. You are God's greatest gift to me." And then he said, "Dory, I would be forever grateful if you read this on the air." So there you go. And Lisa, it's very sweet. So I hope that that helps in some small way. And Todd, we appreciate your service with the National Guard. We know that how that's stressful, not only on the people who serve, but on the family members. Okay, but I'm not going to do this on a regular basis, but I wanted to do that for Todd. Fast 15 is coming up next.